Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is!
The 7 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show here on 560 WQAM. Streaming all over the internet, radio.com and the radio.com app. However you listen, we appreciate your patronage here tonight. We go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Got to talk some Canes, man. I know that, I came to find out that some of you out there were annoyed with all the World Cup talk that I had on my show for the 4 weeks, the month or so that the World Cup lasted. We're diving headfirst now into American football, my friends. A lot of Dolphins, a lot of Canes talk here tonight. So we go out to that Toyota of Hollywood hotline and visit with our friend Christy Chirinos from the South Florida Sun Sentinel on the Canes beat. She's up at ACC Media Days this week. Christy, how you doing this evening?
I am doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing so well. And Christy, I had this past segment, I did a top three list of the top three South Florida athletes that I believe create the hottest debates among fans. And, you know, Okay. Number one on my list, no one's surprised here, Ryan Tannehill. Number two, I went with Hassan Whiteside. But number three, I went with Malik Rozier. Like, Malik Rozier, Christy, I'm sure you have the same experience when you talk to your readers on social media, you see people out and about. A lot of Cane fans just seem just even like disgusted at the idea of this guy starting another year because they want Nikosi Perry to step up this season. And Christy, I'm very confident that Malik Rozier is going to be the guy again as a senior this coming year. And I truly believe that he can get better and tweak some of the things that plagued him over the final three games last year.
Well, I mean, you are right. Whenever I write anything involving Malik Rozier or tweet anything involving Malik Rozier, my mentions are, well, that's great, but he's not going to be the quarterback.
Wrong.
I don't know if the people can say that. I mean, every indication coming out of spring was that he was the guy, but Mark Richt wants to challenge him. Mark Richt has seen that when Malik is pushed, he tends to rise to the challenge. He likes competition. And, you know, there was a point in the spring where he said, listen, do you just wish your quarterback didn't need that just came naturally? Maybe. But this is how Malik is wired, and so we're going to push him. And, you know, if somebody beats him, great. If somebody doesn't, you know, this is a kid who started 13 games for us last year, you know, won 10 straight of them. And so, I mean, you've got to think, yes, he's got the edge going into camp. And my thought is that, you know, come September 2nd, he will be the starter unless I see something different, you know, over the next month and a half. I think he'll be the starter against LSU. And, you know, we'll just see how things play out in camp. But you're right. If you want to talk about debate, that is one of the debates. And, you know, what's the line that the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team?
Yep.
You know, and that's a little bit what you're seeing with Miami right now. And I'm pretty sure that the guys that are here, you know, Coach Rick and Amon Richards, especially, you know, those are the offensive representatives, are going to get questions about Malik tomorrow. Heck, you know, Jaquan Johnson might get them too. He's,
right,
you know, he's facing them in practice. So I expect that all three of them will get quarterback questions. I expect they'll be talking about Malik and Nikosi and Jaren and Cade, and we'll see. But I'm with you. Right now, my thought is I don't see much changing September 2nd other than the guy who started 13 games for them last year.
You know, Christy, our station really does an excellent job covering the college football media days, courtesy of our friends at Capital One Orange Bowl. Like, we've had coverage of SEC. We've got a guy out at Big 12. Of course, ACC will have a presence there with Joe Zagacki. So we're going to hear a lot of that on the radio station. What can fans expect to hear, and could any news come out of these ACC media days? What should fans be looking out for as far as coverage this week?
Well, I think the big thing, obviously, is just you're getting that whole back to football sense. That's starting to come up. And, you know, I think you know, pretty much the expectation is, you know, talking to people across the league, kind of reading up on what other writers have been writing while I was on vacation. The sense is you're probably looking at another Miami-Clemson type of showdown in December for the ACC championship. But, you know, I'm interested to, you know, I'm still here in Charlotte on Thursday morning, and I want to hear what Willie Taggart has to say about what's going on in Florida, you know, in Tallahassee up at Florida State. Mm. I want to hear what Justin Fuente is talking about. I mean, Virginia Tech had an incredibly bumpy offseason, you know, players being arrested, players being suspended, players, you know, there were questions about academic eligibility for some guys. So, you know, those are some of the storylines that I'll be watching, aside, obviously, from everything involving Miami, which is, you know, the team that I cover and the team that most of your listeners and my readers care about.
And also, like, I would love, and I'm sure you or somebody there will ask Justin Fuente if he feels his team is really being overlooked, Christy, because I know that I'm sure that up in the Blacksburg area, they're expecting Virginia Tech to really compete for that coastal title and give Miami a tough time this year, whereas it seems every publication, and I'm fine with this because I love the Canes, is picking Miami to come out of the coastal. So I would love to know if Fuente is going to use that as bulletin board material.
Well, you've got to imagine he will, right? But, I mean, Virginia Tech is, you know, they're going to have to replace seven starters on defense. That's a huge
wow.
ask. That's for anybody. That's a big challenge. But they do have the fact that Miami's going to have to travel up there this year. And Blacksburg can be a tricky place to play. It's one of the best environments I've seen in college football. You know, and anytime you have to go on the road and play a team of that caliber, you know, I know that Miami's going to have it circled. I know Miami's going to take them seriously, but you're right. You know, with everybody just penciling Miami in as the coastal favorite, Justin Fuente has something to say to those guys and say, look, again, they're picking against you. Again, they think it's going to be Miami who, you know, didn't have a great showing in the ACC championship game. Can we do better than this? I think we can do better than this. And, you know, he's going to use it. So it'll be interesting to hear what those guys have to say tomorrow, along with Miami and everyone else that's here.
We are joined by Christy Chirinos, covers the Miami Hurricanes for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Christy, looking at what we expect this Canes roster to look like this coming season, where do you rank the areas of concern, right? I look at the offensive line. I think they're very well coached under Stacey Searles, but they did look a little shaky during the spring period. Defensive tackle, there's going to be a lot of new faces there. You got to hope that Gerald Willis lives up to his potential. Mm-hmm. Nesta Silvera comes in and has a strong freshman year. How do you look at some of the areas of concern, and is there any other unit I'm leaving out?
I mean, I think you hit on the two big ones. Those are the two big ones that I see. You know, you're going to look at depth issues at a couple places, and people are going to look at cornerback. How are those guys going to step up? And, you know, who's going to be able to step up and provide help to Travis Homer at running back? Will Lorenzo Lingard be that guy? But for me, the biggest thing, the thing that I am most concerned about going into camp is the offensive line, and even more a little bit than the defensive line. I think the defensive line has talent. I think that they, you know, they're young, but I have faith in Manny Diaz being able to get that job done. I just need to see a huge improvement from what we saw from the offensive line during the spring. I mean, Greg Rousseau, a freshman, was, you know, putting up monster numbers in those scrimmages when it came to sacks. And obviously we didn't get to see all of that, but you shouldn't be hearing that. I mean, that's great for Greg, but you want a freshman who's been on campus for just a couple weeks to be dominating like that? I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see if they can put everything together. I think, like you said, Stacey Searles knows what he's working with. I think he's a good coach. He will get things going. And, you know, they've got Venzel Bulware coming in, so that'll hopefully be a help. I mean, he's a transfer, graduate transfer, played at Tennessee, so he's got experience. It'll be interesting just to see how that kind of develops, because while they had a decent enough group across the first unit, the second unit is, you know, I don't know that there's anything there just yet that, you know, they're going to feel comfortable putting out there against LSU.
At this point, how much do we know about the indoor practice facility and how close that is to being fully operational?
Well, I haven't had a chance to go down to campus probably in a couple months. It's, you know, everybody's been taking a little bit of vacation time, but like everybody else, I've been following the progress in terms of pictures. I saw that they put the goalpost up. I saw that they put some lights in. So it is rolling along, and the expectation has always been that it would be ready, hopefully, you know, at some point for camp. Will it be the first week of August when they start? I don't know. Will it maybe be the second or third week? Maybe. But it does seem to be like everything is rolling on schedule. Everything seems to be coming along, and the pictures that you're seeing are just, you know, it's impressive when you think about the fact that Miami is the last school to get one of these. that they've been able to get it done as quickly as they did when they really kind of got that lead gift, that's been pretty remarkable. So it'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, the expectation is it'll be ready sooner rather than later.
Christy Chirinos from the South Florida Sun Sentinel is with us. You know, Christy, there are, I guess, two different ways that a big program, and of course I consider Miami a big program, to start a football season. You can either open up with a warm-up game or two against the Cupcakes like Miami has done over the last few years, or you can play a primetime game against a mammoth program like LSU. To you personally, what do you think is the better way to start a season? Is it to kind of have the warm-up game or to be, boom, right there on national TV again, a tough game right off the bat?
No, I kind of like finding out who you are and what you are right away. That's me personally. I don't know that, you know, other people would agree with that, but I think Mark Richt seems to agree with that because he signed, you know, he's been okay with Miami opening against LSU, and then he's got Florida coming up next year. You've got Alabama down the road in a couple years, so I think he sees that possibility too. And you know, it can be a little scary. I mean, look what happened to Florida State last year in that opener against Alabama, and just, you can say that kind of derailed everything for them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you want to be, like you said, a big boy program, and this is a big boy program game for them. And you know, they're going to find out right away about the strength on the offensive line. They're going to find out, you know, what they've got going on the defensive line. And if they struggle and if they lose, they are going to know those things before they get into the meat of their ACC schedule. So I'm excited for the possibility of seeing what they can do against LSU on a big stage, national TV, at, you know, Jerry's World out there in Texas. So I think it'll be fun. And for me, that gets you excited to get to camp. That gets you excited to work through camp. It gives you a sense of urgency. So I'm a big fan of the big deal openers. I think they kind of set the tone and get everybody excited.
I'm just happy the football's almost back. Christy Chirino,
yeah.
How was your summer? Like what? And I'm sure you keep working probably more than people realize throughout the summer, but when you do have some time off, when it's not a heavy recruiting period, when the season isn't going on, like what does Christy Chirinos do for leisure time? Like what did you do over the summer?
Christy spent a lot of days on the beach.
Nice.
That's what Christy did. We were really lucky. We were able to do some traveling this summer. You know, we're able to take a couple cruises and just kind of spend some time with family. That's a big thing because, to me, the joke last night at dinner was, well, we basically will see you in December now, right? And I said, yeah, ACC kickoff is kind of the point where I say goodbye to you guys.
Oh, wow.
And we'll see, you know, obviously it's not that drastic, but yes, you know, I will be spending a little bit more time at work over the next couple months. So, it's, you know, summer is kind of about catching up with the family. But one of the things that I really do like too is Miami does a lot of their community outreach events during the summer. You know, players go visit kids in hospitals and elementary schools and after school programs. And the Hurricanes are nice enough to let us tag along on some of those. And it's a chance to talk to the players and see them in a little bit of a different light. Everything's a little bit more relaxed. You know, they're doing their off-season workouts, so they'll talk to you about that, but they'll also talk to you about what they're doing with the kids they're spending time with. And so that's actually, there was a few of those before I went on vacation, and it was nice to get to go to some of those and Mark Richt's youth camps with the kids, you know, interacting with little peewee players. So there was a few things here and there to do, but it does slow down in June a little and into early July, but now is when we're getting to the fun stuff.
The heavy lifting begins, and make sure you're following Christy on Twitter at Christy Chirinos. Plenty of updates to come from the ACC kickoff, and check out Christy's work in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Thank you so much for taking the time, and it's great to talk to you again.
You got it, Donna. Whenever we want to talk some Canes, give me a holler.
It. Got some Canes over here. Whoosh, whoosh. Enjoy your week.
All right, you two have a good one.
Good stuff there from Christy Chirinos. You know, when we come back, made pretty big news yesterday that the Palm Beach Post is eliminating their Miami Heat beat. I mean, it's a Palm Beach paper, and I'm sure the fact that, you know, the Heat are not a contending team right now had to do with that decision, but that means new roles for a couple of great writers, right? Our friend Anthony Chang is now full-time on the Canes beat, and our other good friend, Tom DeAngelo, is going to become kind of a roving columnist and reporter who's going to do some work covering the Dolphins, covering the Canes, and then covering some other local events to that Palm Beach area. And Tom DeAngelo is one of my favorites. I think everything this guy writes, and anytime he's on my show, gold from Tommy D. So Tom DeAngelo is going to join us next. I do want to talk to him a little bit about what he's going to be doing now for the Palm Beach Post. And also, I want to get Tom's sense, now that he's going to be covering virtually every major team in the area, who he thinks is the closest to truly contending. Tom DeAngelo will join us next here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
I'm going to talk here with our friend Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post. And now that Tom is going to be doing a lot more coverage of the Canes and Dolphins, these are the types of interactions he can now expect. So I just spoke to Christy Chirinos. We were talking Canes there. Love you too. Our buddy Terrence Sullivan, who I really like, tweeted to me, love you too, but giving Malik constant passes is laughable. Malik deserves props for his 3,200-yard passing and 26 touchdowns, but you two not mentioning his 14 interceptions and 54% completion percentage is sad. Love you too, but please keep it 100. Well, okay. I would encourage you to try, and I understand that talk radio, the reality is people listen primarily in 20-minute bursts, right? You're in the car for 20 minutes, you miss some context, right? There are some of you that listen to the entire 4 hours, so you get the whole tapestry. Others will listen to 15, 20 minutes at a time. I have talked extensively tonight when I brought up how debating and polarizing Malik Rozier is about the 54% completion percentage. I've said he is far from a perfect quarterback. I've also said my thinking on reality is I would be shocked if Mark Richt turned to N'Kosi Perry over Malik Rozier, because Mark Richt has given us every indication that Malik Rozier is going to be the starter. Clearly ahead in spring, he's talked numerous times, has Richt, about how far ahead Malik Rozier is over the competition, over Perry, over Jaren Williams, his veteran leadership heading into his senior year. I think N'Kosi Perry's time will come. I don't think it's this coming year. If you think I'm giving Malik Rozier a pass, I do think that Malik Rozier is a little bit underrated, because people remember the three games at the end of the season where he struggled more than the games where he went 10-0. Completion percentage needs to go up. Turnovers need to go down. Not a perfect quarterback, but in no way am I giving the guy a pass. I just needed to clear that up. Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post joins us. Tom, I bet you can't wait to cover the Canes now, huh?
Well, I got to thank you, because that 30 seconds I just heard just doubled my knowledge of UM football.
Oh, man. So tell the people out there a little bit about your new role. No longer going to be on the Heat beat. And I can say, Tom, that I will miss your work there, as I will also miss Anthony Chang's work. You guys did a bang-up job in recent years on that Heat Zone blog.
I appreciate that. And we enjoy doing it. And, you know, unfortunately, this business is ever-changing, and sometimes decisions are made that, you know, not all of us agree with, but the Post has decided not to cover the Heat with a beat writer any longer. And I will say this, this has happened to me three times, because in 2008, I was covering Florida State, and they decided to cut that beat.
Oh, wow.
But they went back to it, and they went back to it when Bobby Bowden's end started coming and said, you know, we've got to, you know, do stories and cover that. And then Jimbo Fisher comes in and it takes off. So, okay, well, let's continue to cover it, because they look like they're getting better. They won a national championship. So I was on that steady from going, you know, they put me back on it. And then two summers ago, they cut it again. So, you know, those are just decisions that the company makes, that we just do what we're told. And then at that point, we had done, now remember, 2008 or 9, somewhere in there, we actually, before it was about 2007, we actually cut the Heat beat one time before.
Hmm.
And then the big, you know, Chris Perkins was covering it at that point, as a matter of fact. And, the big three came back, and we decided, you know, they decided we needed a Heat beat writer, hired Heat. And he was covering the Heat for us for a while, and then you know, things, people changed. Ethan went to the Herald, and And then all of a sudden there was some movement. And 2 summers ago, when I was taken off Florida State, they put myself and Anthony on the Heat, and we went all in. And 2 years later, now they're, you know, our company was sold to a new company, Gatehouse Media. So there are changes, and that's expected whenever there's new ownership. So I'll be doing a lot. Anthony, by the way, Anthony's covering UM. Speaking of UM, and if people loved his work in the Heat, you'll love his work on UM, because Anthony is a very talented writer, passionate about whatever he's covering. So he'll do a great job on UM. And, you know, I've been doing this for 37 years, and I've covered every beat in the state. I mean, I've covered Miami football. I've covered Florida State football. I've covered Florida basketball. I've covered the Heat, the Marlins, the Clippers at different times.
As a follow-up to that, what is the most fun beat you've ever been on out of all the teams?
Two things stand out. Number one is I love the NBA. So covering the Heat has been a great run for me. I started my first year covering the Heat was the year before Riley got here. So the Riley's arrival was my second year, and I was a lead beat writer for many years. Then we did some switching around, but even though when I wasn't the lead beat writer, I was still involved. I went to every year they were in the finals. I did all the playoffs, home and away, and I was still involved in the coverage. So I've always been involved in the Heat, either as the lead beat writer or as a backup. Yeah. For the history, you know, since the Heat started. Since 94. And even before that, when they started, I did some stuff, but regularly since 94. And it's funny you ask this because in Las Vegas, at one of the games, I was sitting next to Alan Houston. And I introduced myself when we were talking. And I'll tell you this, the most memorable thing, stretch of games, I guess you'd call them, the most memorable stretch of my career is those 4 years of playoffs between the Heat and the Knicks.
Me too. I love
and
that.
It was unbelievable. And I was saying, this is exact stuff I was saying to Alan Houston, and he was really good, because he was talking about how excruciating those games were. And I said to him, the thing is, an NBA game now, you can be 70 to 50 at halftime, and you think, they can still come back. The Heat-Knicks playoff series, every basket was important. From the very beginning, every possession was valued, because the game was going to end 70-68 or 74-72. It was so much different than today's game that the drama, the tension of all those games. All four series went to the ultimate game, whether it was the fifth game, a 3 or 5 game series, or a seventh game. There was just all kinds of side subplots with the Riley leaving New York, the Van Gundy's, you know, coaching against each other, Ewing and Mourning, best of friends, playing against each other. There was all kinds of storylines, and as we know, how they all ended basically down to the last minute of every series. That was just, I will never forget that. And then, you know, I love the NBA, but college football too is a passion of mine. I love having covered college football. I went through it one time. I've covered about 15 national championship games. I've covered more than 50 bowl games. And it's just, several of our teams, national championship, the Florida State national championship in 2000 and 2013, the Miami, and when I was covering the Canes in the 80s, from 85 to 90, I was a Canes beat writer for the Palm Beach Post. So that run was incredible. That was Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson run.
That's a great time to be on that beat, Tom.
That was unbelievable. I'll tell you what about that time, and it was true. I remember one of the beat writers came up with a saying that was so true. Said the most exciting 15 minutes in sports was the Hurricanes locker room after a game.
Wow.
Because those guys were, and they were just unfiltered. There were no parameters. There were no restrictions. They could say what they want. But all week long, they would say, "We're going to kick whoever they were playing there. We're going to kick their butt," and they'd go out and they'd kick their butt. They didn't care what they said. The coaches didn't care what they said. It was a great time. It's so much different to today, where the college football access is so limited. It's sad, because they don't allow us to talk to them hardly at all. It's very difficult to get good stories, because you're not allowed to talk to these guys. Back then, it was, you talk to them any day you want. You know, you could call coaches, call them in their office, and they talk to you. Now you can't even you know, you can't talk to assistant coaches in most programs. So it was, that was a lot of fun because those games, you know, I remember the Notre Dame game, the third and 43, and they got
Randall Thrill Hill, baby,
Craig Erickson to Randall Hill, the Cotton Bowl. Randall Hill ran out of the stadium and came back in. I mean, stuff like that, stuff you never see anymore. The Oklahoma game, the Brian Bosworth game, all those Oklahoma games. And, you know, I covered Charlie Ward. I covered Chris Winkie because I also covered Florida State football in the early 90s when we made some changes. Our paper likes to change things around over the years and, you know, just keep things fresh. So I went from covering to FSU. So I was at the height. I was covering FSU in the 90s for many, then before I went on the Heat when they were at their height. I was covering Miami in the late 80s when they were at their height. So, it's just been awesome. I've done it all in the state. So it'll be fun just getting my hands in a lot of little things, writing columns, you know, covering some golf, which up here in Palm Beach County, we have Lacta Golf Writer. I'm not going to be a full-time golf writer, but I'll be involved in the Honda, the Masters, things like that. So a little bit of everything. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and Tom, speaking on the Canes, like I've got to think that there's a strategic reason why the Palm Beach Post is no longer going to have Heat beat coverage, but they are keeping a Canes beat. I've got to think, Tom, it has something to do with, do you think the Canes are probably, let's say, the most likely to be the next South Florida team to really contend for a title?
Well, yeah, that's probably true, but I don't think that's in their thinking. I think the main thing is the company that bought us has a paper in Columbus, Ohio, has a paper in Austin. They also bought the Austin American Statesman, which is a Cox paper like us. A Gatehouse bought both of us about the same, but within a month of each other. They see, especially having Columbus for a while, they see what it's like in a college town. And I know we're in Palm Beach, so we're not in Miami, but they see the passion, and they know with college football, it's different. They, you know, the pro sports goes up and down with the team winning, team losing. We know what it's like in Miami. It's difficult when you're not winning to garner that passion, and because let's face it, a lot of us aren't from here. You know, there's just not that. But these colleges winning, win and lose, no matter where they are, there is so much passion for college football. And especially in this area, especially in the South, and they see it up in Columbus, Ohio. So that area also in Texas, obviously, where Austin, you know, the University of Texas located in Austin. But I know they believe that, you know, it's going to be that way. Let's continue to cover that beat because of the passion for college football. They have their claws in a couple of college football towns. So they want to continue to keep that coverage alive with the Palm Beach Post, with, you know, covering the University of Miami. You know, let's face it, obviously for us, the biggest sports are, they are 60, 70 miles away, but a lot of our guys live down there. Our Dolphins guys live down there. You know, Anthony does. So for them, it's not that difficult. It'd be difficult for me living in Palm Beach County, but still, I've been making that drive for 35 years, depending on what I was covering, whether it was going to Tallahassee or going north or going south. I've been, you know, you don't, being where we are, you know, got to get in our car and go places because a lot of it's not happening in our county. So, yeah, so I think they see that there is a different type of passion and fan allegiance for college football down here than there is for pro sports.
Well, arm yourself for those Malik Rozier debates, my friend. You'll get into some of those.
I can't wait to talk to Anthony. He's headed to ACC Media Days. I think Christie's there.
Yeah.
He's getting familiar with it all. So he's going to speak to them tomorrow. Also, like Christie will be doing with the University of Miami, talking about their day is tomorrow for their players and for Rick to talk. So, it'll be the same thing, getting familiar with all of that. But, I know there isn't a day where there's not going to be some kind of controversy. It just shows the passion of the fans, and they're gonna, no matter how, you know, a team kicked, what we saw University of Miami last year, where they 10-0, they start 10-0, but they're still, you know, are they good enough? They're gonna win the ACC championship, and they, you know, then I know they hit the skids a little bit there the last three games, but there'll always be something out there for these fans to debate and argue and call in shows like yours, Alex, to talk about.
Well, I can assure everyone that Tom DeAngelo will continue to be a friend of the show, and I'm glad, Tom, that you're still going to have your hand in a lot of different cookie jars around South Florida sports. You can follow this man on Twitter at TomDeAngelo44 and check out his work in the Palm Beach Post, the actual paper, or the website, palmbeachpost.com. Tom, thank you so much for the time, my friend.
My pleasure, Alex. Looking forward to talking to you about a lot of different things in the future.
Yeah, tremendous stuff, and tremendous insight there from Tom on print media and kind of the way that the things are being covered now. It's very much a different era, right? And I think I'm a little bit, and a lot of it is the nature of my job, because I really seek coverage of people that I really know and trust, right? Because I feel like to do my job effectively, I know that people like Tom DeAngelo and Anthony Chang from the Palm Beach Post do tremendous work. You know that Matt Porter, who left to cover hockey in Boston, that was one of my top Canes guys. Our friend Peter Ariz, who's no longer a journalist, he's now working for a sports agency. He was one of my guys for, and the fact that I think a lot of these guys are moving around tells you something else about the nature of the business. I trust people like Tom, like Ira Winderman, like Manny Navarro, because I see them out and about. I see them on the beat. I see them actually covering practices. I see them actually really taking in all the minutiae, everything that happens with the Dolphins, the Heat, the Canes. I know that these local guys are really all over it, right? So I feel like to do my job effectively, I have to lean on the local guys. But I would venture to say that just for the casual sports fan, Tito, isn't it fair to assume that a lot of the casual sports fans, you get your news from aggregate sites, you get a lot of your news from notifications that pop up on your phone, you're not necessarily getting it from the source the way I like to get it.
Bleacher Report and social media have completely revolutionized the way we access news now. And
yeah, like the crazy thing, like for me, when I'm doing show prep, I do stop at the aggregate sites, but it's not my first stop, right? Like my first stop would be the big three for me that cover the local sports, Herald.com, SunSentinel.com, PalmBeachPost.com. And then after I've gone to those websites, I'll go to some national sites, ESPN.com, CBSSports.com. Then I go to the sports blogs. Then I go to the BigLead.com, Larry Brown Sports, TMZ Sports sometimes. And then after I'm done with all that, let me make sure I didn't miss anything. Now I'm going to go to Bleacher Report. I'm going to go to the aggregate sites, which usually are reposting stuff from the local sources. So maybe I missed something, I check those sites. So that's not my first stop. It is a stop, but I think for a lot of you, the aggregate sites are your first stop now.
Twitter, man. Twitter makes everything just so much accessible now, especially with like their stories and the way they can record moments now and keep them on Twitter. Completely revolutionized the game.
Absolutely. All right. So I want to get into I've made it a quest. Some of you hate this, but with so much negativity surrounding the Miami Dolphins, I like to search for the positive opinion pieces on the Dolphins, and I found one. We'll get to that next here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Really good stuff in that last segment from Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post. I thought that he was really open and like not in a disrespectful way to his company at all, but very open about the changes there. You admitted like he certainly is not happy about, as you wouldn't imagine he is, but he's not happy about the fact that the Palm Beach Post has eliminated the Miami Heat beat. They're no longer going to have dedicated beat. They had two of them last couple of years with Tom DeAngelo and Anthony Chang. They no longer have the dedicated Heat beat. Why would you expect the guy to be happy about that? But he is still employed, and he's going to do kick-ass work covering all of South Florida's teams now. And like, I'll be honest, as far as like being an interviewer, that's a tough thing to handle, because you do want to get his take on the fact that the work he's doing is getting severely altered, and I can't imagine he's happy about it, but I do not want to put him or Anthony or anybody in a position where it sounds like I am baiting them to criticize the company where they work for. So I did not know or expect how much detail he would get into that. He did get into some detail on it, and I thought he handled it in a way that was both incredibly classy and incredibly respectful to his company, while also giving me some pretty good inside information on why those decisions were made and kind of the way that the newspaper business works. And unfortunately, the newspaper business, as I would imagine it's going to happen to AM radio at some point, is dying. I think it's dying a slow death because more people go to aggregate coverage and social media coverage than they go to the actual source of the local beat writers. It becomes very hard to be appreciated in that line of work these days. If you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us by the phone lines, 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. Let's go out to the phones. Let's talk to Anthony from Connecticut here on QAM. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, what's up, brother? How we doing, guys? How we doing,
T? Pretty good, man. How you doing?
Doing all right, bro. Doing all right. And I'm not just saying this because you guys know I'm a huge fan. You were just talking about how before, you know, you guys do a show, you do your research. You look at both the national headlines and you look at the local headlines. And I think that the irony here is I think that ESPN and Lock and Fora, for example, it's kind of like they just threw those articles together.
Yep.
Like, I don't really know how much thought was actually put into that. You know what I mean? Because to say that Jay Ajayi was replaced by Frank Gore, that's just not true.
Right.
That's not true. And to say that Ryan Tannehill misses more games than he plays, just, you know, compare him to Sam Bradford, that's also just not true. So it's like, how much thought did you put into that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, it's weird because it's like that's almost an impossible job to do, to try and go in depth on 32 local teams when in the case of, and I think that Lock and Fora, like Adam Schefter, like Chris Mortensen, they do excellent work, but they do their best work when they are reporting big news, national news, breaking news, who's getting cut, who's injured, you know, who's getting hired, who's getting fired, who's getting signed. Like that stuff that those national reporters tend to get because they have better sources than the local guys. They tend to get those reports and do an impeccable job putting them out there. But I think when you put a guy like Lock and Fora in a position where, and maybe he put himself in this position where he's covering every local team and writing articles, ranking local quarterbacks and all that, I think he puts himself in position to fail when he's trying to go into detail on local beats that he does not cover.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that guy who wrote the 32 teams, I think, was Bill Barnwell.
Yes, it was. Putting himself in a very tough position, and he's now being criticized by at least half the fan bases in the NFL.
Oh yeah, and Dono, I tweeted this out to you. Colin Cowherd did an entire segment of it being one of the worst, you know, takes of ESPN in their history. But in regards to the Tannehill debate, I personally feel like there's two arguments being made this offseason. Either he's average or, well, hey, look what he did with Gase. I kind of lean more towards look what he did with Gase because if you think about it, Ryan played right away. And for a long time in the NFL, when you drafted a quarterback as high as you did Ryan, he sat out for a year. And the reason for that is to take it all in, sit back. Why are we doing this play? Mm. What would I do differently in that situation? To really learn the offense. And the first couple of years, look who he had, A, and B, he had different offensive coordinators, and C, he was getting sacked more than anybody in the league. So it's tough to ever feel comfortable. And, Donald, I was at that Tennessee game. I go down for one game a year. We picked
nice.
The game. We thought we could win. You know, 2 years ago, I sat, you know, we had real good seats, and he just looked so uncomfortable in the pocket. Obviously, that was because there's a lot of pressure, but his pocket movement just wasn't there. It wasn't just pressure. His decision-making wasn't that great. And I think from that time to the game where he got injured from, you know, against the Cardinals, he improved tremendously. He looked like a completely different quarterback. Now, what makes me scared about him is a big part of his game is his legs. And if he psychologically is not able to move how he did, that's a problem. And no one can say that other than him and maybe Adam Gase.
And you know what? I think I want to give you some credit there because I think you said something really insightful there using the word psychologically because I based on everything that I'm told about him being cleared by doctors and having the full confidence, I don't think that for him it's going to be a physical limitation, but if he does have any limitations moving outside the pocket, it's going to be psychological because he remembers, you know, the two times that he suffered knee injuries on that left knee. He's going to remember that, and I think that more than the physical could become an issue for him.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the biggest, you know, the biggest improvement that he made, in my opinion, during that season was his pocket presence. Because if you look at the years back, you know, there is a guy, he never really, you know, he didn't do that well with job reading hot, where there was that Eagles game where he got crushed in the end zone. He didn't see the guy coming off the edge. You know, you've got to know that. You've got to have those instincts, you know, as a quarterback. But just this whole offseason, I don't know about you guys, but I've never seen anything like this in terms of the coverage and the negativity of the Dolphins. I've never seen anything like it personally. I'm really positive. And a big reason I'm positive is because whenever the national media predicts we're going to be bad, we end up being good somehow.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. It's vice versa. I mean, I when he said that thing about Jay Ajayi, Kenyon Drake led the NFL in rushing the last 5 weeks of the year. And I think, I don't have the stats in front of me, but in seven games as a Dolphin, as Jay Ajayi was a Dolphin, he had like 138 carries for 465. I think Drake, in only six games he started, had 100 attempts, and he had 145 yards.
I think that sounds right. I don't have it in front of me, but I think I remember seeing that.
So Ajayi had 38 more carries in the games he started than Kenyon Drake, and he only had one more yard to show for it. So, please, enough not saying you guys with the Ajayi stuff. I think that they're, you know, Landry's a huge loss. And I don't know, you know, you got to, it comes down to football. What I loved about Landry, and I think you guys will remember this, that game against the Rams, he got like stopped on the 5 yard line, carried the defense.
Yes.
Like, that we're going to miss.
Yeah.
Landry fights for yards. He fights for those extra yards. But in terms of his production, we're just we're recreating him in the aggregate. Meaning, if Wilson and Amendola both get 40 receptions each or 45 each, you're up to 80, 90 receptions. I think we can replace his production, but I don't know if we could replace that other part about Jarvis, and that's it, man. I really appreciate the call. I think that we're going to, on paper, we have one of the best teams that we've had in a while. Call me crazy.
A lot of people will. You know it. A lot of people will call him crazy. I do think we have a lot of uncertainty. Like, a lot of uncertainty given you gave up, either through trades or roster cuts, a handful of your highest paid, in theory, biggest name, best players, right? And losing Ndamukong Suh, in losing Mike Pouncey, and giving up Jarvis Landry. Those are some big names you've given up. And I think it's strategic, and I think that those players at this point, especially in the case of Pouncey, who, yes, started 16 games last year, but was not vintage Mike Pouncey. And, you know, in the case of Jarvis Landry, the money you would have had to spend to keep him, I don't think was worth it. Now, with Ndamukong Suh, probably a little bit overpaid, but one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL. They took calculated financial risks to revamp that team and to go a little bit younger and try and get rid of guys who maybe weren't the best leaders on the planet, but were some of your most high-paid players. And that creates some question marks with this Dolphins team. Take more of your phone calls, texts, and tweets when we come back. By the way, Tito, when I earlier said that I consider Tannehill to be in my second tier of quarterbacks, where, okay, I consider maybe my top tier is bigger than some of your top tiers. Like, I consider my top tier to be like Brady, Rodgers, Roethlisberger, Breeze. I would even put Carson Wentz in that top tier, although, you know, he wasn't actually around for the Super Bowl run. Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan. I think Philip Rivers is vastly underrated by some. I put him in my top tier. And then after that, I group Tannehill with the Garoppolos, given Garoppolo really has barely proven anything at this point. Jameis Winston's, Dak Prescott's, Marcus Mariota, Derek Carr, Alex Smith. I put Tannehill in a tier with those type of quarterbacks. I consider that to be my second tier. Matthew Stafford, don't know if I mentioned him. I consider that to be my second tier of quarterback. I said that earlier, and here are some of the texts that I got. Did you snort a line of Kool-Aid? You are cliff diving into a sea of Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid shower. I think you drank that Mountain Dew and it affected your judgment. Dono Tannehill. I merged my name with Tannehill. Dono Tannehill doesn't make plays in the fourth quarter. Look at his stats. Cocaine is a hell of a drug, a texter writes. Are you drinking Kool-Aid with Hawk? I got called crazy for saying that I think Ryan Tannehill is pretty, pretty good.
At first, I was kind of questioning the guy who said, did you snort a line of Kool-Aid? But then I remembered you could do that with a straw, so that's possible.
No, also, you're probably too young for this, but back in my day, you used to be able to get the powdered Kool-Aid. You know, you mix it with water.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah. You could do that.
Yeah, nowadays everyone's buying like juice boxes and like bottles of Kool-Aid. Like back in the 80s, you used to get like the Kool-Aid powder and you'd like throw it into a tub of water and you would mix your own Kool-Aid. So in the powdered form, it could be snorted.
Kool-Aid's overrated. I'm just gonna go out there and say that.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. But here's the thing: like, is Kool-Aid really overrated when you're six? I mean,
I guess
I'm not. I mean, we're both grown men. We're not going to go out of our way to drink Kool-Aid. But when you're six, like Hawaiian Punch, Kool-Aid, that's where it's at.
Okay, fair point. Because Hawaiian Punch was very good.
And nowadays, it's garbage. Have you tried to drink Hawaiian Punch lately?
No, I haven't.
It's not good.
But wait, are Hawaiian Punch and Kool-Aid the same thing?
I don't think so.
I feel like those flavors are distinct flavors, right?
Similar genre. Like they're interchangeable, right? You go to a kid's party, at least, I don't know if there's, I've got a kid now, he's 5 months old, so there's a lot I don't know yet about kids' parties, but in my day, you'd go to a kid's party, and any of the four following beverages were acceptable. If they have Kool-Aid, party on. Hawaiian Punch, party on. Capri Sun, party on. Squeeze It, party on. I thought the Squeeze It was actually the most fun.
That's that bag of like liquid, right?
No, it's like they come in like little plastic bottles. So you feel like you're like 5 years old, but you feel like you're drinking a beer because it comes in a little plastic bottle. You twist off the top of it and I don't know if Squeeze It still exists. Can someone help me with that? But like you felt like you were drinking like a little kid beer back then, knowing nothing about the fact that the alcohol content was 0.0%. 8 o'clock hour, the Alex Donner Show coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.